Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, April 29th. City to FAA, Air Park will be rebuilt with modern facilities. Letter also states the city would save money maintaining one airport, and such a move would open up land along Loop 250 to development that is more consistent with the existing land. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. If the city of Midland gets approval from the Federal Aviation Administration to move its executive airport to Midland International Airport, Air Park will be rebuilt with new hangars and facilities, according to a letter sent to the FAA. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton sent a letter to the FAA on March 1st asking for guidance in relocating the airpark. In the letter, Payton notes that most hangars at the airpark are more than 30 years old and says the city plans to, quote, design and build a new general aviation facility at Midland International based on current and future needs with modern, efficient, state-of-the-art hangars and other facilities, end quote. Payton also states that maintaining one airport instead of two will save the city money. The two runways at the airpark will need expensive rehabilitation in the next 5 to 10 years, he said. Quote, consolidating operations at Midland International will enable the city to focus on using these funds to maintain and improve the airfield infrastructure at our primary airport, he wrote. Thus, these cost savings and efficiencies would be a substantial ongoing benefit to the overall aviation community, end quote. Additionally, moving the airpark would provide users with longer runways, an on-site air traffic control tower, and greater security, according to Payton. On April 13th, the City Council approved hiring the engineering firm Park Hill to analyze the feasibility of moving the executive airport. The firm will look at the requirements outlined by the FAA and evaluate the cost of the project. Payton said after that meeting that the council was looking into moving the airport and seeing what opportunities there might be if that land was available for another purpose. In the letter to the FAA, Payton says that the site would provide a significant opportunity for important economic development on Loop 250. Quote, Midland has experienced substantial population growth during the past 10 years, and the lack of sufficient close-in space has required residential and commercial development to move beyond our 250 loop. Commercial development and residential housing at the site would be far more consistent with the existing land use in the surrounding area, he wrote. Payton notes in the letter that obtaining the necessary approvals to relocate the airpark would be a lengthy process. City Council members did not have a timeline for when the airpark would be moved, if approved, or for the completion of the $75,000 feasibility study. Payton says Midland economy should focus on oil and gas, not diversification. This story was written by Caitlin Randall. Editor's note, in a future edition, the mayor addresses balancing quality of life improvements with the expectation to keep taxes low. During a forum last week, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton said the city's economic development should focus on what Midland does best, oil and gas, rather than diversifying into other industries. Quote, I think the fallacy with economic development thinking that we need to address is nobody needs to run away from their primary economic driver, he said during an event hosted by the Midland Liberty Leadership Council. He then noted that oil is linked with Midland like Las Vegas is linked with the state of Nevada and Disney World is linked with Orlando. Quote, you don't kick Mickey Mouse out just because you think he's going to die, Payton said in a metaphor for the oil industry. Quote, you got to keep Mickey Mouse, and he brought you here, and we keep running with him and keep walking with him and see what happens." End quote. Peyton noted that the Midland Development Corporation was created about 2 decades ago, before the shale revolution, when city leaders believed the oil industry was ending and they feared for the future of Midland's economy without diversification. Quote, "The fact of the matter is that has changed," he said. "If we're going to diversify, we need to diversify into that which is coming out of the oil and gas industry and which is going to support the energy industry." End quote. He said that even as the country moves in the direction of energy practices that have been deemed more environmentally friendly, quote, "you cannot get green without black gold." End quote. The greatest economic development Midland is going to see is the scientific development that will occur within the oil industry, Peyton said. The mayor said he recently spoke with mayors in other oil epicenters in North Dakota, Montana, and Wyoming. He and the other mayors are planning to speak to congressional members over the next several months to advocate for the oil and gas industry, he said. Quote, "You can't even drive your Tesla without the oil and gas industry," Peyton said. "And if the entire country went to electric vehicles tomorrow, they couldn't charge them." End quote. Peyton's comments came during a forum with Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven at Rolling Sevens Ranch Event Center last Thursday that was moderated by Reporter Telegram editor Stuart Doreen. The mayors also addressed their future plans for the two cities and discussed issues like taxes and sanctuary cities. MISD could learn fate of federal stimulus money today. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. State leaders on Wednesday reported the release of $11 billion in new federal funds to help public schools address student learning loss and costs incurred as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. What this means to Midland ISD was unclear. The school district previously told the Reporter Telegram federal stimulus money allotted for schools is expected to provide Midland ISD with $47 million in additional funding. Quote, "Due to federal requirements, 2/3 of the funds are available immediately under grants administered by the Texas Education Agency, with the final 1/3 to be distributed contingent upon approval by the U.S. Department of Education," according to a statement from Governor Greg Abbott's office. Midland ISD officials are expected to participate in a statewide call with the commissioner of the Texas Education Agency on Thursday to learn more specifics about this release of funds. Midland ISD previously told the Reporter Telegram that when all funds are dispersed, the district would stand to access approximately $14 million from Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund 2 and $33 million from ESSER Fund 3. These one-time funds are intended to support a comprehensive learning recovery effort in Texas over the next 3 years.
Community calendar. MPD survey. The Midland Police Department has launched an online survey in an effort to gain feedback from Midland residents. The Midland Police Department is interested in receiving comments and suggestions so the department may continue to provide exceptional and professional service to the community. This brief survey allows citizens to rate areas such as community concerns and department response. If you are interested in participating in filling out the survey, please visit surveymonkey.com/r/THNF9MN. The survey is available for responses until May 14th. Meetings. Hospital District, 11:45 a.m. Thursday in the administration boardroom. Chats with Midland Superintendent Angelica Ramsey, 5:30 p.m. May 3rd at South Elementary. events, and activities. Member Sculpture Garden Party, 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday at the Museum of the Southwest. Grab a cocktail and tour the museum grounds to learn more about the outdoor art collection. Memberships start at $40. Intaglio printing or dry point printing with Midland Palette Club, 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday. Participants can learn how to do intaglio printing dye point. Tickets are $135. National Shelter Adoption Day event, 6 to 8 p.m. Friday at Hand Cafe. Join Grand Companions for live music and pet adoptions on National Adopt a Shelter Pet Day. Live Rooftop Art Show, 6 to 11 p.m. Saturday at the DoubleTree Hotel. $10 cover charge. Live art by Jojola Art, Asahel Madrid, and more. Hosted by Artworks Midland. Midland YMCA on course for Our Cause Golf Tournament, May 4th at Ranchland Hills Golf Club. Online, midlandymca.org. Email eharris@midlandymca.org. Phone 682-2551 and ask for Liz Harris Hurado. State of Midland, May 4th at Bush Convention Center. A Celebration of Life, 10 a.m. to noon, May 8th at Scarborough Sports Complex. Storytime for Young Readers, 10 to 11 a.m., May 13th, at the George W. Bush Childhood Home. Victory Run and Walk with Midland Rockhounds and Gifts of Hope, 7 to 10 a.m., May 15th, Security Momentum Ballpark. Call Gifts of Hope at 218-8714 or visit giftsofhopetx.org for more information. League of Women Voters Midland Annual Meeting, 6:30 p.m., May 17th. Keys for Hope Clay Shoot Fundraiser benefiting Gifts of Hope, June 18th at Midland Shooters Association. Keys for Hope Dinner and Cocktails featuring dueling pianos by Felix and Fingers, June 18th at Bush Convention Center. Call Gifts of Hope at 218-8714 or visit giftsofhopetx.org for more information. Nonprofits. Community meetings for Rope Youth. The nonprofit is looking for volunteers to help feed food insecure children this summer. May 6th at Golf Course Road Church of Christ in the Gathering Space, 6 to 7 p.m. May 7th at Higher Grounds Coffee Shop, 6 to 7 p.m. May 8th at Tall City Brewing Company, 8 to 10 a.m. May 10th at Stonegate Church Building F, 6 to 7 p.m. Entertainment calendar. Dinner and live music featuring the Midland Airs, 5 p.m. Thursday at Cafe at the Gardens. Dueling pianos, Thursday at the Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Eli Young Band, 7 p.m. Friday at La Hacienda Event Center. Tickets are $25. Pecos and the Rooftops, 8 p.m. Friday at the Rustic Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Tickets are $15 to $270. Take 3, 7:30 p.m. Saturday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $30 to $50. Matthew West, May 5th at Cimarex Pavilion. Basin PBS will host Marty Stewart and his fabulous band for a street party May 6th. Tickets are $70. Online, basinpbs.org/community /screenings-events/MSLive/. Phone 563-5728. Hardy, A Rock Tour 2021, 7 p.m., May 7th, at La Hacienda Event Center. Tickets are $17.50. etix.com/ticket/P/7140664/Hardy-Midland-La-Hacienda-Event-Center. Midland Northside Lions Club's 28th annual We Serve Breakfast, formerly called Bunny Breakfast, 7 to 10 a.m. May 8th in the Midland Park Mall Food Court. Henry Cho and Ron Hortman, 8 p.m. May 8th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $54 to $104. Midland Rockhounds Home Opener, May 11th at Momentum Bank Ballpark. An Evening with Voktiv, part of the Phyllis and Bob Cowan Performing Arts Series, May 18th at Midland College. Contact the Midland College Foundation at foundation@midland.edu or phone 685-4526 to reserve tickets. West Texas Blowout, May 22nd at the Horseshoe. Cody Johnson, June 11th at the Horseshoe. Cesar Ornelas Law, Mextex Family Fiesta, June 12th at Centennial Park. Celebration of the Arts 2021, July 16th through 18th at the Bush Convention Center.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday. Opinion Extra. ConocoPhillips steps up for Midland just like Concho did. ConocoPhillips sent a message to its stockholders and the energy sector with its acquisition of Concho Resources last year. On Tuesday, the message ConocoPhillips sent was to the Midland community, and it was, "We have your back." ConocoPhillips announced $2.5 million in charitable grants and sponsorships across the region. Of that, $1.7 million was presented to more than 50 organizations in the Midland area. Areas focused on by the grants range from education, health and safety, the arts, civic and social services, to disaster relief. It was a very Concho-esque move. For years, Concho was the gold standard when it came to corporate philanthropy in Midland. After all, Concho was Midland-born, Midland-proud. Even in its final months before the announced acquisition, Concho's landmark giving included program-creating donations to the city's Centennial Park and Midland College's Engineering Academy. That giving will continue, as will the support for Hillcrest School, Bynum School, and the West Texas Food Bank, among others. In addition to creating value for shareholders, one of the most important parts of this transaction for us was the benefit to local communities where we operate, stated Lower 48 Executive Vice President Tim Leach in Mella McEwen's report. "We're very pleased with the enhanced competitive position this brings to Midland. ConocoPhillips is committed to investing in and enhancing the places where we live and work." Leach always understood the value of giving back to Midland. He always was among the first to show support to worthwhile community-building initiatives. What was good for Midland was good for Concho. ConocoPhillips, it appears, will continue to offer actions that match Leach's words. The company also announced Tuesday it will double its initial investment in the Permian Strategic Partnership by becoming a Tier 1 member company to support the PSP's mission of improving the quality of life for Permian Basin residents. The fact is, those reading this opinion article have heard this newspaper talk apprehensively about the recent round of mergers and acquisitions. Bigger hasn't necessarily been better when it comes to giving back in Midland. We believed Midland was better because of the competitive philanthropy that happened with Smaller Fish, wanting to show nonprofits they could outperform other companies. With fewer players, there is less competition. Also, bigger companies, especially those based elsewhere, haven't always put Midland first. ConocoPhillips gave Midland one less reason to worry, or 2.5 million less reasons, depending on your point of view. It has been interesting to watch the latest resurgence in positioning in Midland and across the basin. Midlanders have seen an explosion of headquarters development, land acquisition, and billion-dollar mergers. All of us should be equally as excited to see what's next, not just in the oil fields of the Delaware and Midland basins, but with the oversized checks given to nonprofits that can make budgeting a little easier. ConocoPhillips, thank you again for building on that foundation that Concho laid deep in the heart of Midland. Stuart Doreen.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, April 29th. Deidre Lynn Price, age 45, passed away on Friday, April 23rd. Memorial services will be held on Saturday, May 1st, at 3 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Rosewood Chapel in Big Spring. Deidre was born October 29, 1975, to Debbie and Jimmy Reed in Pryor, Oklahoma. She is survived by her mother, Debbie Reed, of Big Spring, three daughters, Stormy McMahon and her husband, Mitch McMahon, of Midland, Elizabeth Rice and Claire Rice, all of Midland, her grandson, Ryan McMahon, of Midland. She is preceded in death by her father, Jimmy Reed, as well as her grandparents. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Dorothy June Crittenden Driscoll, age 86, of Houston, passed away on Tuesday, April 20th. Dorothy was born in Sheffield, Alabama, to David and Bessie Crittenden on April 29, 1934. She moved to Crane, Texas at an early age and grew up there with her three sisters, Norma, Nan, and Ann, and her brother David. She married Frank Kendall Driscoll on February 28, 1958. They lived in Midland, Texas, and they were married until Frank passed away in 1988. Dorothy is survived by her son and daughter-in-law, Sam and Barbara Driscoll, her sister and brother-in-law, Nan and Frank Cavilla, her sister and brother-in-law, Ann and George McMichael, her daughter-in-law, Elaine Driscoll, as well as her grandchildren and a great number of nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her husband, Frank Kendall, son, Frank Hugh, brother David, and sister Norma. Visitation will be held in Ellis Funeral Home on April 29th between 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Her funeral service will be held in the chapel of Ellis Funeral Home on April 30th at 10 a.m. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Frank Pace Hawk was born November 8, 1920 in Purcell, Oklahoma, to Lemuel L. Hawk and Grace Bell Hawk. Frank was the seventh of their eight children. He passed away peacefully after 100 remarkable years on April 22nd. Frank married Maxine Hughes in June 1945. Frank is survived by his daughters Shanna Hawk Moran and companion Trevor Money of Midland, Jamma Hawk Holmes and husband David of Louisville, as well as three grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. Frank is also survived by several nieces and nephews, many friends and special caregivers. A memorial service took place on Monday, April 26th. A graveside service followed at Fairview Cemetery. Memorial tribute donations may be made to Grand Companions, a local pet rescue organization helping people save, honor, and connect with pets. Donate online at grandcompanions.org. On Saturday, April 24th, Jeff Sunderland, loving husband and father of two adult children, passed away at the age of 54 in Midland. Jeff was born on March 27, 1967, in Newaygo, Michigan, to Jack and Janice Sunderland. On June 3, 1989, Jeff married the love of his life, Laura Sunderland. They raised two amazing children, Preston and Kaylee. Jeff was preceded in death by his father, Jack. He is survived by his wife, Laura, son, Preston, daughter, Kaylee, mother, Janice, sister, Joyce, and brother-in-law, Norm Kubersky. A memorial service will be held on Friday, April 30th at Fairmont Park Church of Christ in Midland at 4 p.m. A graveside service will also be held on Sunday, May 2nd, at Highland Cemetery in Melissa, Texas, at 2 o'clock. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations for Jeff may be made to help fund late-stage Lyme disease treatments for his daughter, Kaylee Sunderland. These donations can be made at a GoFundMe site. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 29th, 2021. School Hospital Board candidates square off. Election Day is Saturday for local races. OA News at OAOA.com. Candidates for the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees and Ector County Hospital District squared off in a public forum at the Odessa Marriott and Conference Center Wednesday. The forum was put on by the Ector County Republican Women. Early voting ended Tuesday with 261 ballots cast, and Election Day is Saturday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Moderated by Carson Bush-Jost of KMID-TV, it featured ECISD Position 4 incumbent Chris Stanley and challenger Jesse Christensen and incumbent District 7 board member Ben Q. Rose and challenger Kathy Rhodes. Stanley said he came from Washington State when the University of Texas Permian Basin went to a four-year institution. The challenges that we faced at that time are some of the same challenges that we face now, Stanley said. We have a large population of first-generation students. Some of those are not academically solvent enough, and they come in under immense amounts of remediation. That remediation requires that we spend a lot of extra time with the students in order to get them ready to graduate from college. I believe I am eminently qualified to be able to take on this task on the school board, especially because I've seen it on the backside and I've worked to all levels of students that are enrolled in school. Christensen said he is the father of four. He and his wife adopted all four of their children through the foster care system. I want what's best for my kids, and I want what's best for the kids of ECISD. We've got a heart of compassion for the kids, and our kids need a voice. I want to be that voice. I've served the American Legion and the veterans of Ector County, and I think this is my next step. The next direction that I need to go is to the school board, Christensen said. On the topic of bringing students back to campus for in-person learning, Christensen said he thinks it's time. I think it's time for all of our students to be in front of the teacher and not have to worry about that teacher that they're in front of having to teach the kids on the computer, too, because that takes away from her time with the students that are in her classroom. We need to get back to some kind of normalcy, and our kids need to be in school to where they learn, to where they're not falling behind, he said. Stanley said this is the 21st century, and there are some practices that aren't coming back. Right now, college students at UT Austin, 75% of their classes were online. A lot of that is because of the COVID. It's possible now to go to school with children all over the world. They call it Harvard from home. We want the kids back in school. What Mr. Christensen said is absolutely true. We're dealing with something called the COVID slide. The COVID slide means that pedagogically, We are going to have to become more innovative with our education, Stanley said. Christensen said he thinks schools need better security. I've been an advocate, whether it be that we reinstate the guardianship program or the marshals program in ECISD, or we give more to the ECISD police department to where we can have liaisons and officers on every campus. School security is a must. I want our kids and our teachers to feel safe and to be safe when they are at that school property, he said. Stanley said he didn't think anybody was against safe schools. I just think the way in which we do it is important, and I know that our police force at ECISD does not agree with that statement that we need more guns on our campuses, because we have law enforcement contingency that's there and access to every law enforcement agency. The big issue we need to focus on is the success of our students. If they're not learning, we're not growing. We need to focus on their education, Stanley said. The challenge facing public school education at the district and state level is standardized testing. I think we've all seen the epic failure of the STAR test technologically, and so what we're hoping for is there's new ways in which we can assess the progress of the students that come down the line. We're never going to get away from some form of standardized testing. I think how we assess our students and their growth is incredibly important. We're using something now called MAP data, where we can go granular on each student in each class. That's been successful, Stanley said. Christensen said students are being taught to the test and they're not learning to absorb. They're learning to take a test, and we keep on pushing and we keep on pushing, and we're making them just statistics. Our kids are not statistics. Our kids are students that need to learn, who are our future, he said. Christensen, who is a homeschool high school graduate, said he doesn't think there are certain qualifications you need to serve on a school board. I was born and raised in Ector County. I've lived here for 30 years, raised my family here. I've got deep roots and a heart for the kids, and I think that's all you need to be a school board member, he said. Stanley, who holds a master's degree, said both of his children graduated from high school in ECISD. And my children had a very, very successful run in the school district. I've seen our school district performing at its highest level. I believe that I'm going to be able to get back on that school board and try and make that happen for the rest of the students in our community. I've worked with groups as diverse as the Jesus House with the Homeless Women and Children's Center. I've worked with the Boys and Girls Club. I think the future's bright. I don't think we need to be afraid of the future. What we need to focus on is 21st century learning. I want everybody to think about this. We're one of the last industrialized nations on the planet that is using as a 6,000-year-old Neolithic agricultural calendar to train our students. Many places in the world are not. If our students are falling behind and sliding, it might be because of the way we're thinking about the way we're educating them, Stanley said. Christensen said it's time to get back to basics, back to pen and paper, where teachers are teaching students and students are learning. It's worked for hundreds of years. Why can't it work now? On the hospital board, Keyrose said he has served the last 4 years during some struggles and administrative changes to the Medical Center Hospital. All those things have been a bit distracting to the progress of what Medical Center Hospital can achieve, said Keyrose, who is a chiropractor. Rhodes, who has been the corporate vice president of a heating and air conditioning company for 35 years, said she has served on many civic boards appointed by the city council. I have led commissions. I feel like I'm very well qualified to serve on the hospital board, Rhodes said. Keyrose said he has been through 4 years on the hospital board. We've really had to turn the ship. Whenever I got on the hospital board, there was a lot of financial stress. There were some leadership issues, he said. Rhodes noted that she has served the community diligently. I know this board and I know their board members. My word is my bond. You can take it to the bank. And the last thing is, I'm sober of spirit. I think the hospital needs to continue to focus on health care for the citizens and supplying that health care in an efficient manner. I believe that maintaining strong financial stability is very important, along with reviewing the billing system and recruiting high-quality medical personnel. Hero said he would like to see medical records online and an app on people's phones so they can have access to all their billing and records. My mother is at MD Anderson in Houston, and they have that. I'd like to do that. I'd like to see a cath lab and heart procedures, quality heart procedures, really driving quality into the region, Kiro said. He said he thinks part of the board's role is to bring the community to the administrative level to help solve issues. Rhodes said board members need to get to know the citizens and be available to them. We must know exactly what's going on in their lives and then be able to work with the administration in informing them what our constituents, what they want of us. Listen to them. Most importantly is listen. Be available and then communicate to the administration in every way, shape, or form how we feel as the board, Rhodes said. Asked how the board ensures strong collaboration and partnership with MCH staff and retirees, Rhodes said the retirees are angry and frustrated. They want more communication from the hospital. They feel like they don't have that representation right now in many ways. The citizens need to have better access to their board members. I propose a town hall for myself. I want them to be in my ear. I want them to be telling me what it is they need from our hospital board, Rhodes said. Kiros said this is built into the mission, vision, and values of the hospital. It's binding to the organization. It's a commitment to producing quality health care for the citizens of Vector County. It's a commitment to the institution. It's a commitment to you. You want to make sure that we have quality physicians, and it's done to the mission, vision, and values. I believe strongly that we are the region's premier source for health care, and we need to stay on that path and for the hospital's future, Kiro said. Election Day. Visit tinyurl.com/E2MMNE4K to see where to vote in Saturday's election. Voting is 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Celebrating a Decade of Excellence. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Ector County Independent School District's Executive Director for Bilingual ESL Education, Betsabe Salcedo, and George H.W. Bush, New Tech Odessa Principal, Gerardo Ramirez, stand for a portrait last month in NTO's lunchroom. Principals reflect on 10 years of NTO. By Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. For Adrian Vega, Betsabe Salcedo, and Gerardo Ramirez, it's hard to believe it's been 10 years since George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa started. Vega was the founding principal, and Salcedo and Ramirez followed as campus chiefs. NTO brought project-based learning and one-to-one technology, where each student had a computer, to Ector County ISD. At the time he was asked about coming to New Tech, Vega said he was a middle school principal in East Texas using New Tech concepts. Shortly after the creation of NTO, University of Texas Permian Basin devised the UTPB STEM Academy and ECISD formed OC Techs, Vega said. Vega said Hector Mendez was superintendent at the time and had heard about the new tech model at a conference. Through project-based learning, its website says, New Tech Network schools empower and challenge students to learn, succeed, collaborate, communicate, and engage in the world around them. Vega, who is now Chief People Officer at the Sewell Family of Companies and Executive Director of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, said he was using new tech methods in terms of the model, but was not connected to the network. It was just more of these best practices and trying to instill these certain skills and project-based learning as a primary mode of instruction. So when the district knew they were going to open up a new tech high school, I ended up applying and had the opportunity to come out and be the first principal, Vega said. He added that his dissertation is on project-based learning. Part of project-based learning is students creating projects and presenting them to panels or community members for feedback. A lot of the elements of the new tech model just aligned with my own personal educational philosophy. As a middle school principal who was not connected to any of this stuff, I was wanting to apply these concepts on the campus where I was leading, so it was through my research that I came across it. That's why, for me, given the opportunity to move out here, even if it was across the state and packing up my family, it was too big of an opportunity to miss, Vega said. He said he's pleased that NTO is still flourishing. We're able to establish a firm enough foundation in the early years that we were recognized as a national demonstration site campus, so people would come and look and learn. We were an Apple Distinguished campus. We and the district, the staff, worked really hard to truly establish a solid foundation that was based not only on these education tenets and principles, but on a culture and climate, which is what I really think sets that model, or at least new tech, NTO, apart, Vega said. Ramirez said suspensions, fights, and bullying are rare because of the school's reflective approach to discipline and its culture. Salcido served as a counselor and dean of students that first year. She also had other roles, such as test coordinator. I think that what really made it special was that you started from the ground up, Salcido said. They had a chance to look at everything and figure out how it was going to look and what they were trying to achieve for students. Ramirez said it involved rethinking everything from the master schedule to course offerings and how to be college-focused. I know Ms. Salcido put in a lot of hours in those early years, helping to make the school a reality, Ramirez said. Salcido, who is now executive director for bilingual and ESL, English as a second language, was at NTO for 4 years. Vega was her mentor. She said she worked with outstanding teachers and other staff. A lot of them were first year, so they were willing to put in the work and willing to learn with us in order to create something different for kids. Everybody had a buy-in. They had to buy into the model, into the vision. And so from our office staff to our custodial staff, they were all a part of what we were doing. It was truly special in that sense that we all had to come together and work together to make something really different and think differently, Salcido said. She added that Vega was good at holding fast to the vision and values of the campus. During those years, we worked on our teachers. We call them facilitators, but it's not just a word. They really had to learn to switch gears and how do we facilitate the learning for our students, which we refer to at NTO as learners. Because in a sense, in this building, if you came through this program, we were all learners. We all had something to learn, Salcido said. During the adult learning time, every Wednesday, we would come together and look at our projects and look at student work, because ultimately that was our measurement. Are the students learning? What are the students demonstrating? What are our students' outcomes? She added. Ramirez, who was Salcedo's assistant principal, said it was a lot of stretching for everyone, students, administrators, and facilitators. She, Salcedo, took me under her wing, and then I learned the ropes of administration, specifically at a New Tech school, said Ramirez, who was also taught at New Tech. At first, the school was experimental, but it was intentionally experimental. Parental and community involvement also were, and are, part of NTO, as are field trips to colleges and universities during more normal times. We were very intentional about building graduates that were leaders, Ramirez said. They knew how to collaborate and were very comfortable with public speaking. They could take on major projects, major tasks, and be successful about it. I think our groups, once they go out to college and career, they really see the value in the experiences that they had here. And some of the first group, especially, they knew what the vision was, but we were still figuring it out together. We were proud of the first couple of cohorts that stuck with us until we solidified who we were, and it stood the test of time, he added. That empowers in our culture, which is about trust, respect, and responsibility. Ramirez said it's not just about the words. It's about what it means, what it looks like in the classroom, and how it's demonstrated. It ripples out to everyone, whether they are at school, on the school bus, or at the mall. Ramirez noted that NTO has quite a few culture events that have become traditions. They're always purposeful. Everything we did here at New Tech Odessa was about purpose. Our culture day was about helping them see trust, respect, and responsibility, Salcedo said. She added that anyone who has been through New Tech Odessa has been changed. And in some way or another, we have all had to learn and to grow. Many of the things that we've learned here, we can apply to the things that we do on a daily basis, Salcedo said. So, for example, the value of building instructional capacity, the value of supporting and bringing in professional development, growing our teachers. That's something that is very, very important. That's something that I took with me whenever I became the executive director for bilingual and ESL. It's like, how do we build the instructional capacity of our teachers, especially in an area where a lot of our teachers, they might be in their first 3 years of teaching. And so how do we do that? The other thing is also, how do we monitor? How do we look at student work, student outcomes, to see what the impact of that professional development is? That's absolutely something that is important to me. It's also important to value everybody's strengths, Salcedo said. Council says no to downtown master plan by Federico Martinez, F-M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z at OAOA.com. What seemed to be a routine piece of business turned into a bit of confusion during Tuesday's Odessa City Council meeting. Councilwoman Denise Swanner changed her initial raised hand from a yes to a no on the issue of hiring Kimley Horn to oversee the city's downtown master plan update. Swanner initially raised her hand in favor of hiring the master plan firm, along with council members Deidre White, Maury Willis, and Steve Thompson. But when Mayor Javier Hoven called for a show of those opposed to the motion, he noticed Swanner did not raise her hand. Mrs. Swanner, Hoven asked, while he and council members Mark Mata and Tom Sprawl's hands were still raised in opposition to the measure. After noticing the vote, Swanner raised her hand a second time, this time voting in opposition. "Nay, I vote nay," Swanner said, as she raised her hand the second time. "I vote nay." Willis and White briefly argued that Swanner had already cast a vote, but Hoven quickly declared the motion had been defeated. Following the meeting, Thompson accused Hoven of prompting Swanner to change her vote. Swanner clearly voted twice, and the mayor has allowed her to do that at least three times before, Thompson said. Swanner changed her vote after the mayor prompted her. Following Tuesday's meeting, city attorney Natasha Brooks said it was okay for Swanner to change her vote. At Hovind's request, Brooks also ruled during the meeting that Councilman Tom Sprawls, who voted against the hiring of Kimley Horn, could not make a new motion because council had already voted. I voted against it, but I see no reason not to move forward with it, said Sprawls, who explained he only wanted more information before voting in favor of it. When Sprawls attempted to make a motion to instead table the issue, Brooks informed him it was too late. Brooks told Sprawls he couldn't make a motion to table the issue because council had already voted. Brooks agreed with Hovind's assessment that the issue would have to go back to a city committee, be reviewed, and a new recommendation to bring it back for council for reconsideration would be required. In other action, council unanimously approved a proposal to place a $300,000 10-foot circular art piece that will pay tribute to victims of a 2019 Odessa mass shooting on the University of Texas Permian Basin campus through 2051. City officials initially were looking at placing the memorial at Memorial Gardens, but changed their minds after a study concluded it would cost $700,000 to retrofit Memorial Gardens. Under their agreement with UTPB, the city will maintain ownership of the memorial even if it is someday relocated. Under the agreement, UTPB will construct a plaza at the corner of JBS Parkway and 42nd Street where the memorial will be placed. The memorial will include the names of all seven victims and engraved quotes from their family members. Council on Tuesday also unanimously approved the purchase of more than $600,000 in new technology and furnishings for the police department's new training facility. The purchase includes cutting-edge virtual training technology that will enhance crisis intervention and de-escalation training for officers, Police Chief Mike Gerke previously said during last week's work session. The cost of the new system is $326,471.42 and will be paid out of the police department's capital outlay buildings fund, Gerke said. The total cost includes shipping, installation of the tactical simulators, and a 5-year service support agreement. An additional $142,354.30 is expected to be used to purchase more than a dozen laptops, docking stations, and 29 large interactive TV monitors and various accessories. Council approved the police department's request to spend another $141,221.31 on new furniture for the facility, including various tables, desks, and chairs. The new training facility will be located in the former Central Fire Station, which is being renovated, Gerke said. It's located behind the police department. The department currently conducts its training operations in the basement of the police department, Gerke said. To be honest, it's kind of embarrassing, Gerke said. We wanted this new facility to be state-of-the-art, something we could use to impress potential new recruits and use as a regional training facility. The new facility will be operating by July, Gerke said. Council also approved a $30,000 art sculpture design that, when completed, will be placed outdoors in the facility's front entrance. The 10-foot-tall sculpture, which will weigh 4,000 pounds, portrays an abstract scene of a parent and child standing in front of a law enforcement officer, said Randy Hamm, executive director of Odessa Arts. The project will be paid with capital outlay funds. San Antonio artist Oscar Alvarado was one of more than 40 artists who bid on the project, Hand said. 453 days. For 453 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 17,026 total cases, 366 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 4 students, 0 staff. Midland County, 17,331 total cases, 266 deaths. Texas, 2,882,423 total cases, 50,027 deaths. U.S. cases, 31,976,888 total confirmed, and 570,421 deaths. Find out more and where to get the vaccine at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Pop-up vaccine clinic. Medical Center Health System will administer first dose COVID-19 Pfizer vaccines at a pop-up drive-through vaccine clinic from 9 a.m. to noon Friday at Bethlehem Baptist Church, 1000 West Clements Street. Stay in your vehicle. Vaccines are free of charge while supplies last. Appointments are not required. For more information, call 640-1914 or 853-1344. Quick Hits. Birdscapes Radio. In anticipation of International Dawn Chorus Day, the worldwide celebration of nature's greatest avian symphony, Ballroom Marfa is presenting Birdscapes Radio from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday on Ballroom Marfa's website at tinyurl.com/YV3R5V36. This free-form program, organized by musician and birder Rob Fry, Bitchin' Bajas, Exoplanet, Flux Bikes, will center on Fry's ever-evolving collaborative sonic exploration into the world of birds. Listeners can expect to hear down-tempo dawn chorus, historical recordings, rare sounds, and seabird colonies hosted by Rob Fry and Sarah Melendez, with guests Ed Brass Brussel, Christian Pinto, Martin Fry, Satya Gumaluri, and more. The show will also include excerpts from Experience the Birds, the first episode of Maui Nui Seabirds, Mauka to Makai, and Rob's performative lecture, Hearing Hidden Melodies. For more information, call 432-729-3600. Email info@ballroommarfa.org or visit ballroommarfa.org. Fiesta West Texas. Fiesta West Texas will celebrate its 25th year, May 7 through 9, at the Ector County Coliseum. Doors open at 5 p.m. May 7th. Family shows include Splash Sea Lion Show, Swifty Swine Pig Races, Circus of Americas, UTPB Folklorico Dancers, Shout Cheerleading, Carnival, Food Vendors, and a Cornhole Tournament. The concert lineup includes May 7th, La Zenda Norteña and Los Pescadores del Rio Concho, May 8th, Grupo Signo and La Energia Norteña. Maynant, Los Rileros del Norte, and Los Perdidos de Sinaloa. For tickets, visit fiestawesttexas.com. For VIP, call 432-557-5598 or 999-0268. From staff reports. Closing prices. Posted $60.34. Futures $63.86. Natural gas $2.925. Benchmark US rose 92 cents to $63.86 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.